Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
Tweet at Miriam O'Call.
Well, author Catherine Dunn has a new book out. It's called A Good Enough Mother, and it brings us into the lives of two Irish women called Tess and Maeve and how their families intertwine in good ways and in bad. Catherine is a member of Ace Thorna. She's garnered so many accolades, including the Pen Award. And this new book has already been honoured in Italy, where they just love her. Catherine Dunn, good morning to you. Thanks
for
being
Miriam.
Here.
Thank you very much for having me.
First of all, the Italian love. It's a bit like Johnny Logan. He's adored in Germany. Why do the Italians love Catherine Dunn?
Well, if I could answer that question, I might be able to replicate it everywhere else. But essentially what it boils down to, I think, is that both publishers and critics and readers have all said that I deal with what we often dismiss as ordinary lives, but make them extraordinary, because I believe that no life is ordinary. Everybody has their story, and everybody has a story worth telling, and that I tell those stories with authenticity and without sentimentality. That's the short version.
There's also the Berlusconi element. Actually, just briefly tell us that. I love that story.
Yeah, you couldn't make it up, really,
no.
Could you? No, it was back in 2007. And I was actually living in Spain at the time, and I got a message from a friend of mine to say that something had blown up on Italian media about me and Mr. Berlusconi. And I said, what? Anyway, what had happened was, again, the short version, he had been at a television awards ceremony the previous night and had propositioned very publicly a very young woman. And reporters from his opposition media companies were there, and they thought, well, this is fair game. He has done this in public, so we're actually going to, you know, we're not going to hide it. We're not going to silence it. We're going to make it public. And his wife responded in an open letter to La Repubblica very shortly afterwards to say that he had made her feel like a character in Catherine Dunn's novel. And the Italian title was Half of Nothing. That's how they translated it. And she accused him of making her feel like half of nothing. So I had the great delight of watching him have to make a public apology the following day, because the television cameras, of course, followed him around everywhere. So, yeah, it was an extraordinary event. It was
such a great moment. Now, look, tell me about the setup of this novel. I loved it. We've got Tess. She's a mum of two young adult sons, and Maeve, who asks to meet up. No spoilers now, don't worry. But what can you tell us about how their lives intersect?
Okay, well, I suppose the genesis of the book really was that Tess was the first character who came to me, because I embarked 10 years ago, very foolhardily, on a project of writing a trilogy of novels based in some way on Greek mythology. I've always been a fan of myths, both Greek, Roman and Irish. And when I started to write the first volume of the trilogy, it seemed to me that the overarching theme of everything was actually motherhood. Mm-hmm. That no matter how you look at Greek myths, where they seem to be about war and fighting and territory, they actually all come down to human relationships. There's anger, there's love, there's lust, there's rage, there's ambition, there's all of those things. And a lot of them are played out in the theatre of the family. So I decided, OK, so this is the kind of theme that's drawing me in. Motherhood is the theme. So in this book, Tess was the first mother who appeared to me, because there were lots of things that were happening in the world at the time that I was writing, which just made me look at the whole concept of unconditional love and what that meant and the challenges that it poses to us, both as human beings, but particularly as parents. And because I was dealing with motherhood, particularly as mothers. So I began to think about, what would you do if your son, your child, had committed some unspeakable crime, but your duty and your instinct as a parent is to love them and protect them. But how do you reconcile all of that love with your own moral compass? What do you do in that situation? So that was really the starting point of the novel. And again, it was inspired by an Etruscan vase of Pasiphae, who gives birth to the Minotaur, who's half bull and half human. But he is her son. He's her baby. Mm. And the look of complete devotion and love on that centuries old image of the mother was, OK, so this is the heart. This is the beating heart of the story. This is where you look at, yes, you accept that something dreadful has been done, but you also understand that as a mother, you are not going to let that in any way interfere with your love, although you'll support your child, you'll also challenge them, but that love is at the core. So it was looking at how people navigate those kind of difficult, complex relationships.
Yeah. And actually, all the reviews have been terrific. The Irish Times review made a point of saying it's not an issue-driven novel, it's almost a woman-driven.
Well, my instinct always, I mean, we live in the world, but for writers, I believe really that our stories choose us. We don't necessarily choose our stories. And this was one that came to me with Tess being almost fully formed. And so it began. Then other characters with on a similar continuum, if you like, again, looking at the way women's lives have often been constrained and how a lot of abuse is silenced. And a lot of discrimination has been silenced. And it's that silence that has always appealed to me as a writer as well. How do you tell the stories that have never been told or are not told properly or are not told loudly enough? How do you do that? So it led me then into looking at other times in Irish society where silencings and abuse and abuse of women and sexual violence were issues that were never ever spoken about in public. And during the writing of the novel, there were so many things like the revelations of Catherine Corliss, for example. Mm-hmm. There was the Belfast rape trial. There were so many instances similar to what we saw a couple of weeks ago with Natasha O'Brien. And yet you knew that behind all of these were stories that weren't told. So that drew me into the shameful, what Caelan Hogan calls the industrial shame, the shame industrial complex that existed in Ireland between mother and baby homes, county homes, Magdalen laundries. And it was fascinating to discover, because resilience and friendship and positivity were what I wanted to focus on in the novel, not the issues, but in fact how people respond to those issues and how they grow, very much like what Nikki was talking about earlier, that, you know, it doesn't kill you, makes you stronger. So in a sense, the kind of the conflicts and the challenges that people had to navigate and had to negotiate. And I had done a lot of research some years ago for a non-fiction book, An Unconsidered People. And the heartbreaking stories I came across there was women who moved from here in the 50s and 60s because the biggest shame of all was to have a child outside of marriage. And
then to the UK, wasn't it?
In particular, yeah. And then you dig a little bit under that surface and you see how shame is used as a method of social control and how former countries that were formerly colonies, when they want to reinvent themselves as a new state, and this is not just in Ireland, but that the virtue and the value of the new state, that virtue and value resides in the virtue of its women. So if its women aren't virtuous within whatever terms you conceive virtue to be, what do you do with them? Well, we lock them away. Mm-hmm. And we locked something like 56,000 women away in mother and baby homes. And it's something that I really don't think that we have come to terms with. So I wanted to show how people, again, navigated that kind of situation and how they survived and how they remained compassionate and good enough mothers.
Yeah, I'm always amazed by that. They're so resilient, so many of those women. Now, look, you're a teacher, Catherine, in Greendale Community School. That school, OK, it's closed, but it's where Roddy Doyle taught. It's where Paul Mercier was there. What was in the water in that school that produced all this great writing?
Well, I mean, apart from the names, which are always very nice to hear mentioned, there was a huge amount of incredibly young, dedicated, idealistic and hardworking staff. And I think that's what created the oxygen in that school. Mm. And certainly all of us who were in the English department, we were all huge readers. That's why you become an English teacher, teacher of English, usually because you love reading. And we used to pass books around among each other, which, you know, mightn't have happened in other circumstances. But we were just hugely young and energetic. I'm sure we made lots of mistakes, but we certainly did our best. And people were very dedicated to helping young people reach their full potential at a time when Ireland was going through a very grim recession.
And when was the moment when you decided you could stop being a teacher and become a writer? Because I'd say there's even a lot of people listening this morning who would like to do that. But I suppose it's a leap, isn't it?
It is a leap. And actually, I took a career break for 5 years and I never told anybody I was writing. I just said I was a teacher on career break because I suppose the old attitude in Ireland of who do you think you are, you know, would have been one that everybody, all of us are all very familiar with. So I said nothing until I actually got a book contract. I'd always been writing. I mean, even as a child, I thought if you read, you automatically wrote your own stories. Mm. And I think it wasn't until I was leaving primary school that I realised, oops, actually, other people don't do that. So I kind of kept it quiet for 40 years. So it was a case of, I had a personal crisis. I lost a child in 1991. And at that point, I thought, okay, well, I might have gone as well. And I didn't. And I'm here. And I've survived.
Was that the...
That was a stillbirth
of your
caused
baby,
by an abruption, yeah.
Baby boy.
Baby boy,
baby,
baby, yeah. Boy. So at
what
that
was
point,
he called?
Owen. So
Sorry.
At that point, no, thank you. At that point, it was, okay, I've got another chance. Now I'm going to do what I really wanted to do and see if I can make a go of it. So I continued the writing I'd always been doing, but this time I gave myself the space, the freedom and the permission to take the time off and to finish a novel. And that first book then was published in 1997.
It was almost like Baby Owen's gift to you.
Yes, I have tended to look at it like that over the years. I've tried to, because obviously it's such a huge loss that it's not something that you can see anything good in or anything positive in initially. But I have always tried to cultivate a very positive mindset as well. And I mean, I would think about him every day still, even after 30 odd years. But it's a different kind of thinking now. And I managed to sneak his name into every book, usually one way or the other. So, yeah, it certainly was a watershed moment, let's put it that way. And it just made me decide that this was something I really wanted to do. And I went for it.
There'll be a lot of people listening this morning who want to write that book, who think they've that book in them. I was going to ask you what your recommendations are. Instead of what to read, what would you say to that person listening this morning about writing that book they believe they have in them?
Yeah, and then so therefore it's probably there. And I think a lot of people have books inside them, but that they don't actually give themselves the opportunity or the chance to find out what that story is. And there is no substitute for turning up at the desk. It's a job. And if you want to do it, you've got to make the time for it. And I started off by doing it while I was still working, by getting up a couple of hours earlier during the week, not every morning, but some mornings, and then dedicating time at the weekend and promising myself that I would use that time to write. And writing courses are great too, and writing groups, anything to give you support while you go through what is always a very challenging process.
Well, it's a great book. When I was reading, I was thinking it's a perfect TV drama. It's the kind of thing Nicole Kidman would love. Thanks for coming in this morning. It's called A Good Enough Mother and it's published by B-Times Books and it's great. Thanks so much, Catherine. I wish you the very best of luck going
forward. Thank you very much, Miriam. Thank you.
Mind yourself. We'll take a break.